Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH. Know Your Risk Radio is hosted by Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often volatile markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
Of the most scintillating hours in finance radio, and we got a great show planned for you today. Format is going to be a little bit different. We're going to do the market update, and then the rest of the show is going to be my conversation with our new full-time head of research, Chase Taylor. He just started full-time with us on May 1st. Great to have him in the office and on site. As always, we're going to benefit a lot from his information, which is why we've hired him. And to kind of celebrate that, having our first inaugural interview of Chase being a part of the Bulwark team officially as a full, he's worked on retainer for us running his own research firm for about the last 3 or 4 years. I just coaxed him into our stable full time, about 6 months ago, I think, because we came to our agreement. And then, he joined us full time on May 1st. So great to have him here. And I don't think there's any better way to start it off than have a macro discussion with him. But before we get that, want to go to the market update. So first of all, not a lot's going on in markets. I think you're just going to continue to see the spin cycle that we've talked about. The spin cycle, if it's getting annoying to you, it's getting annoying to me. I have never seen markets fly this blind. They ignore every piece of bad data that comes out, and it's coming out quicker and faster. The data's looking worse. I just don't really have anything to compare it to. And in that light, like I've been telling you guys, we still think significant new lows are ahead of us. But I would not at all expect or be shocked to see another crazy rally. And we were looking at some charts just to give you an idea how crazy could it get. I wouldn't be surprised to see the NASDAQ go up another 8 to 10% from here. And as a matter of fact, a move like that would get us right back to a 50% retracement of what it's already dropped. That's a big move in a bear market rally, but not at all unprecedented. And I kind of went into this expecting to see extremes on all sides of it. So expecting the bear market rallies to be bigger than is normal. And so that wouldn't discount it. I just think at this point, it's kind of like rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. I don't think it changes where we're going. I don't think it changes the trajectory of the markets. And when I say that, guys, I'm not trying to be a fortune teller. There's an article out today by Charlie Munger saying most money managers are fortune tellers, and I couldn't agree with him more. It's about predicting where price goes. We're not saying that, okay? And I want to be very clear. I love Munger, love Buffett. I agree with virtually everything they say. I think they're some of the best to ever do it. But remember, what we go back to, now we recognize this isn't a very good timing mechanism, but what we go back to are the fundamentals and the valuations, and they make no sense in this market. Not only are earnings and revenues already dropping, but these stock prices aren't even building in interest rates. I just can't tell you how disconnected they are. Now, let me take you to an extreme. One of the best performing stocks on the market today is First Solar. It's not a good company. they don't have a profitable business. They might have posted some profits and small gains, but it's not a profitable endeavor. It's just not. First Solar bought a company called Evolar today, or they announced it today. Their stock is up 27% on the day at a $25 billion market cap, okay, for First Solar. Now, let me give you an idea. First Solar is trading at a $25 billion market cap with about $2 million in revenue, and they're reporting a 7% net profit margin. So they're trading at 12 times revenue, First Solar, on 7% margins. That's what they're reported. Their earnings per share last quarter missed by 58% and revenue missed by 24%. Okay? This stock today rallied. Now, so the last quarter, the thing just got destroyed, right? Just horrible results. what is it, less than a month later, it has now hit a new all-time high today because it bought a company called Evolar for $80 million. Okay, now here's the kick. Today, the stock is up 26%, 27%, or the equivalent of about $7.5 billion in market cap because they purchased an $80 million company. Think about that. And this is why I posted a tweet where I said, I can't stop laughing. I do not know if I have ever seen a more ridiculous stock move in my life. I'm trying to think. There've been big stock. There've been big announcements, big new mergers where you looked at the stock and you're like, I don't think it's going to be beneficial. You know, where you thought it was dumb. I have never seen an 80 million. If this is, and just think about this. If that is accurate, if this move on First Solar is anywhere close to real, that would make the CEO of First Solar the greatest investor of all time. He's immediately better than Buffett, Munger, everybody that's ever invested. He just added a $7 billion of value to his company for an $80 million purchase. He is the greatest value investor of all time. Or this market's a complete joke. Okay? This is lunacy. But it's funny. You got to sit back and laugh. This thing, it announces earnings a month ago that are a disaster. They miss by 58% on earnings and revenue misses by 25%. The stock makes a new all-time high, adds $7.5 billion of market cap. Is it even more than that? Because you're before the day, you're at, so you had seven, so you start the day 18. That's even more. That's, 18, 7. I mean, you're looking at 40. That's just insane. It's just insane. Hilarious to see, though. The reason I think that's all important, guys, is that these are just waymarkers. These are things you don't see happen at the bottom of markets. These are the things that you do not see happen when there's sobriety in a market. This is things you do not see happen in healthy markets. This is lunacy. This is idiocy. Okay. When did they announce? They announced, right, March. Their stock didn't even get hit despite that horrific miss. We're at new all-time highs. No one cares about valuation. This is a solar company trading at 600 times earnings. I don't really know what to tell you. This is just a joke. It really is something else. Anyway. Or maybe that was maybe that really bad quarter was the one previous to that. They've got two. They got a really bad one and a good looking one. I'm getting two different results here for March of 2023. I don't know why that is. Anyway, don't trust me on. I'm getting one report that's telling me March of 2023 their revenue was up 49% year over year. It's giving me the same profit margin numbers. I can't make heads or tails of this. Then the other one is looking at me and saying the other one was they missed by 58%. Anyway, regardless, an $80 million acquisition does not make you $7.5 billion more valuable. Another interesting one that we're looking at is Icon, Carl Icahn. The ticker of his stock is IEP. I've always really admired Icahn. He has been a good guy. Never been caught in anything dirty or anything like that. These are some really interesting and serious allegations that are going to be thrown his way by a short research firm called Hindenburg Research. I'm going to talk more about this next week. What I will tell you as far as that stock goes, the ticker symbol on it is IEP. You're going to see a mouth-watering dividend on that thing. I just don't think this is an actionable stock. The allegations, it's dropped huge. It was up like 11% today. Something's going on here. I don't know what it is. I can't wrap my head around saying that Icahn did something purposely fraudulent. That goes against everything the guy is, at least his outside persona. But anyway, if I tell you not to buy it, it'll probably go right back up. If I tell you to buy, anyway, I just don't think it's actionable, guys. There's too much stuff that needs to come out. And it wasn't cheap anyway. If you looked at the dividend, it looked cheap. But it's a unique structure where the majority of the profits get paid out via dividend. I don't even fully understand it. I haven't really looked into it big, but we're just doing some homework on that. But you can read about it. Go pull up Carl Icahn. It's really fresh, so I don't have a lot of information. The reason I think it's pertinent, though, is that let's assume, just for the sake of argument here, and I don't want to do this at all. Like I said, it's really odd because I've just always looked up to Icahn. I just think he's super smart, and he's actually called out a lot of frauds. He's been a good guy, tough as nails. I wouldn't want to owe him money. But as far as being a shrewd operator and a good manager of capital, I mean, he's right up there with the greats. And, you know, maybe you want to take a flyer on the stock here. I just look at it and, you know, I think about, you know, as a fiduciary managing other people's money, there's just too much unknown. So, but like I said, the reason I think it's valid is because let's assume what they're saying about all this whole scenario and Icahn is true. Okay. An assumption we're going to make. You will see more of this. And this is what Buffett talks about. When the tide goes out, you find out who's been swimming out their trunks on. The tide is going out. Non-farm payrolls came out the other day. It's not a huge number, okay? But they were 20,000 higher than was expected. This is kind of exactly what we were looking for, to start seeing unemployment numbers start going higher. The other thing was, when they announced those that jobs report, they also announced, remember the market was sort of euphoric after the last jobs report. Oh, this labor market is so, so strong. There was 250,000, 260,000 new jobs, something like that, 240,000, somewhere in that ballpark. Well, when they issued the new jobless claims numbers, they gave revisions over the last three quarters, and they pulled off about 180,000 new jobs reported. So remember how we've been telling you guys that we think there's a lot of aberrations in job markets, that it's not quite as strong as people think? At least right now, that is starting to look like the case. You're starting to see that show up in the data. And so I just think that's going to be something really important to keep our eyes on. And then getting back to the Icahn thing, looking at the idiocy that's going on at First Solar stock today. And look, hey, it is possible. All I know is that if this acquisition ends up being worth half of what it's being priced at today, I will sell every stock I own and put all of my money in First Solar, because the CEO of that company is the greatest investor of all time. And I'm not even kidding. If this ends up being, if I dig into this and there's somehow this ends up being worth half as much as the market is pricing in, it's the greatest investment of all time. It's the greatest acquisition of all time. It's unbelievable. And I just think all of these things are pointing to the fact that, again, I'm not expecting when I see moves like that in First Solar stock and I see people buying these ridiculous companies that are garbage, and I'm not saying First Solar is garbage. They're reporting earnings. Their earnings numbers feel off to me, just understanding that business from the inside. Now, I'm not an expert on it, but just understanding that business, I think they're playing games with the accounting. I think there's a lot of companies playing games with the accounting. Why do we say that? You know, I don't like to make baseless accusations. Well, we've talked about this in the show before. One of the things that you look at when you're – well, I don't usually look at these things unless I'm trying to figure out where we're at in a business cycle. You know, how close we are. Is it the beginning of a bull market? Is it the end of a bull market? Kind of trying to assess where you're at. One of the things you look at is at the end of every business cycle, right? At the end of every market cycle. And it's just human behavior, right? Earnings estimates get more and more aggressive, right? People get more and more emboldened. As the good times go on, as the profit stacks up year after year, people get more and more emboldened. And they start doing more and more questionable things. And one of the things that has been a very good indicator of the peak of a cycle has been the spread between reported earnings, or the terminology we're using now in this cycle is adjusted earnings, versus income tax paid. Right? Because if you think about it, the ultimate judge of a company's earnings would be the taxes they pay, because that company will not pay a dime more of taxes than they have to. Yet the amount of tax they owe is going to be a very good indicator of what their actual earnings were. Okay, so right now, as of today, You are sitting in an environment where you see the largest gap in history between recorded earnings and tax receipts. So that means the difference between earnings that are being reported on Wall Street versus income taxes that are being paid on those earnings, the gap between those numbers has never been larger. What does that tell you? It tells you there's a lot of nonsense going on in the accounting side of it. Some of it is out and out fraudulent. Some, probably a lot of it, is just being very creative and skirting the picture. But what I'm telling you is not only is the stock market cheap, but what that has signaled in the past is that, is that the stock market's even more expensive than it looks, right? Because those earnings aren't as solid. So you factor that in, you got a market trading right around 22.5-23 times earnings. If you applied the real earnings numbers across the board, you'd be way higher than that. So this market is even more expensive than it appears. And it's getting dumber by the day. I mean, like I said, I still think we're in that Wile E. Coyote phase where he's gone off the cliff and his feet are spinning and he just hasn't looked down yet. So anyway, got to take a quick break right there. As always, guys, if this rings a bell, right, and you're sitting there going, this looks really obvious to me. It looks like things can get really nasty here. And yet I'm talking to my advisors telling me, stay the course. You know, we got a rebound coming. No, you don't. No, you don't. Like I said, stocks, whatever. I mean, when I see moves like this in First Solar, it tells me the idiocy isn't out of the market. Should this market be going up? No. Does it mean that it can't? Absolutely not. Again, when people are bidding up for solar like this, the idiocy is still alive. And as long as that's the case, you got to be prepared for anything. So I don't think we're on the brink of it. I don't think it's a day away. I think we have some more frustration ahead of us, especially those of us that are value minded and want to put capital to work, right? I want a chance to buy things at reasonable prices. And that's one of the most frustrating things about this period of time right now is that, you know, I agree with Munger. You know, you got a lot of prognosticators out there and you have very few people. You know, look at Buffett and the only thing they've been buying is Occidental Petroleum on dips. Why? Everything else is too expensive. People are like, they bought some Apple. Go do the numbers on what they bought. They were reinvesting their dividend. Okay, that's all they were doing, which they do with virtually all their dividend payers. So anyway, but if this seems simpatico to you, if you think that there are tough times ahead, if you think we're heading to a recession, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. You're going to sit there and listen to your advisor tell you, just ride it out. Just stay the course over and over and over. Maybe that ends up costing you another 30. Maybe it ends up costing you another 40%. And I'm not saying we can guarantee you against loss. We can't. But what I can tell you is that we can put you in a risk-managed portfolio where if the really bad outcome occurs, it's going to be a good thing for you. Overall, we're going to be in a great position to step in there and buy, right? Moreover, if we are wrong and First Solar really is worth $7 billion more, and this is the beginning of a new miraculous bull market, then worst case scenario, maybe we can make a little less in the beginning, but you're going to be good on either side, guys. And that's how a retirement plan should work. It should work regardless of what happens. Think about what I'm saying. Well, if the market goes well the next 3 years, I should be in a good place. That's gambling. What are you doing? We can give you a portfolio that costs less, way less exposure to downside risk, and gives you more upside potential. Okay, we do it every day. Give us a call, 866-779-RISK, and 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com or capitalmanagement.com. You guys know the drill. Stick with us through the break. We'll be right back. Rest of the show is going to be our interview with Chase Taylor about macro environment. We talk about the icon thing. We're going to and kind of compare and contrast his view on things versus the guy we had on last week, Warren Pies. Anyway, stick with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
Do better in bull markets. Do better in bear markets. Pay less fees in all markets. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management. You can subscribe to Zach's free newsletter, The Bulwark Insider Report, at knowyourriskradio.com.
If you're retired or headed there, is your portfolio positioned for a successful retirement? Well, with the state of the economy right now, risk management has never been more important. Join Bulwark Capital's Zach Abraham for his free live webinar May 25th to learn how their risk management strategy and active management portfolio could potentially lower portfolio volatility. Again, it's a free live webinar.
Todd, protecting retirement portfolios against loss is our number one focus. Our live webinar is a fully transparent look into the Bulwark investment strategy. We'll show you how it worked last year as well as in previous years and why a basic 60-40 stock bond mix is outdated and a big risk in today's economy. Learn how our risk management strategy can help protect your retirement.
Join Zach May 25th at 3 p.m. Pacific. It's free, but space is limited. Register now at knowyourriskradio.com and learn about Bulwark's risk management strategy and performance. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Truck Financial LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. So I got a little bit ahead of myself there. Got to do one more short segment, about 3 minutes, before we bring on Chase Taylor. But that gives me plenty of room and plenty of time to talk about something to our investors as well as all of you. Okay? Guys, this is a period of time where you must take your mind off of short-term returns. Okay? I had a client the other day. I think value right now is down 2.5% on the year, something like that. 2 weeks ago it was up 3. It's just been bouncing around in this down 2, up 2, down 3, up 3 kind of range. I think we finished positive today, like 0.3%. Anyway, just bouncing around, just trading in a range pretty much all year long. But I had clients, they're getting freaked out. They're like, Zach, I just want to move on to cash. And I go, why? They go, well, we're down. I go, you're down 1.8% on the year. They're like, yeah, but the market's up. And I go, guys, yeah, but we were down 12%. We were down 12% less than the market last year. So just what's got you free? Well, we just think everything's going to go to heck in a handbasket. And I go, well, I do think we got some tough times ahead of us. What's the problem? Like, well, we don't want it to be going down. And I go, guys, the reason we're down a little bit this year is because of the defensive stuff that we have in the portfolio, right? Including the bonds. Okay. But there's going to be massive volatility in bonds, and you just got to ride it out because of the inflation and interest rate situation. Okay, this is where we have to delineate between price volatility and quote-unquote losses. All right? If you're freaked out about the economy, then you shouldn't panic sell your bonds. Okay? And guys, welcome to investing. Not every quarter is going to go your way. We had two quarters last year where we underperformed the market. Two quarters. We outperformed the market over the course of the year by 12. That's what matters. It's not where we're at right now. It's where we're at the end of this thing. And if you want to successfully navigate bull markets, get ready to be wrong part of the time, because that's the way – or bear markets. Not bull markets, bear markets. That's the way they work. This is a time to be patient and ignore price movements, period. Manage risk. Wait for the buying opportunity. Okay, and if that's not the message you're getting told, it is my personal opinion. Now, obviously, it's my firm, so I'm biased, but it's my personal opinion. You're not getting done right. I mean, the writing's on the wall. It looks really clear. If you want to make sure you don't take a bath, now I can't guarantee what's going to happen. I'm just telling you, we're going to put you in a portfolio that makes it virtually impossible for you to take a bath. You can lose some. Our clients were down 7.5% last year. Market was down 21, NASDAQ was down 33, bonds were down 25 to 30. I'm not saying we can't lose, but 7% gain, shoot, last January, January 2021, we made 30% in a month. Or not 30, 16% in a month. That's just part of the game. Give us a call, 866-779-RISK, and 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, or capitalmanagement.com. You guys know the drill. Stick with us through the break. We'll be right back with Chase Taylor. You're listening to the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
If you're retired or headed there, is your portfolio positioned for successful retirement? Well, with the state of the economy right now, risk management has never been more important. Join Bulwark Capital's Zach Abraham for his free live webinar May 25th to learn how their risk management strategy and active management portfolio could potentially lower portfolio volatility. Again, it's a free live webinar.
Todd, protecting retirement portfolios against loss is our number one focus. Our live webinar is a fully transparent look into the Bulwark investment strategy. We'll show you how it worked last year as well as in previous years, and why a basic 60-40 stock bond mix is outdated and a big risk in today's economy. Learn how our risk management strategy can help protect your retirement.
Join Zach May 25th at 3 p.m. Pacific. It's free, but space is limited. Register now at knowyourriskradio.com and learn about Bulwark's risk management strategy and performance. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Truck Financial LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us for my favorite part of the program. And this is a new one. I have never interviewed a Bulwark employee, but we are lucky enough. It's kind of an inaugural show here for us. This is the first show that we have done where we're going to interview Chase Taylor, the proprietor of Pinecone Macro Research, which now happens inside the confines of Bulwark offices. So Chase is a Bulwark employee, started full-time for us on May 1st.
May 1st, yep.
Yeah, May 1st. So welcome to the show, welcome to the firm, welcome to the office. We're doing this in person. We have never done that before.
We haven't done it in the office in person, that is true. One time in the studio back in Seattle
in
the olden days, but
that's right.
First time here.
Now, you probably don't need the – you see – you're not wearing the headphones. You can. You don't need to. See, you do this long enough, and I feel like I'm naked without the headphones. It's weird that the sound doesn't say, anyway. But he's not a grizzled old radio veteran, so he doesn't need that.
But headphones. I do have a face made for radio, so it all works out.
Well, then that's one of the reasons you got hired here. You have to have a face made for radio, man. It's a firm built on radio, so you know we got to have a face made for radio. Anyway, want to go over? We had Warren Pies on last week. Does great work. I know you.
Big fan.
He's a fan of your work too.
And a friend. He did not take it easy on me in fantasy football last year, but that's too bad.
Yeah, that's what he said. You guys were in a fantasy football league, right?
Yep.
So we talked macro with him. I kind of knew the rough constructs of what he was thinking and where they were pointed. What was interesting to me is just very similar. We have very similar outlooks and very similar feels. Let's kind of hear it from you, because you know I know our clients will be interested to hear this view from you because you're our head of research. And then also for all the folks out there, I was just laughing the other day. We were talking about the non-farm payroll release that was going to come out, and I hope you don't think I'm setting you up here, but it was just funny because the expectation was like for 245,000 new jobless claims or something like that. And you were like, you know, it really is time. And it's about time we should see a pop here. And the claims came in at about 20,000 higher than expected, right? 262, 265, somewhere in there. And I say that not because you drilled it, because you and I both know getting one data point right is lucky. But I do bring it up because it is remarkable to me when I look at this market and I listen to so many commentators, all of the confusion out there where I know through your lens and through our lens, you know, looking at these things, the market is the only part of it to me that is confounding. Economically, it seems like it's tracking right along what we thought, what you've laid out. Kind of give us an update of where we are right now and where we're at in this process, because I do believe bear markets is a process. It's a process, right? They never happen in one fell swoop. These things take time. Where are we at in this process? Both, you know, focus most on the economic side at first, then we can kind of delve into the market side of things.
Yeah, when it comes to the economics, I think the clouds really just started to get dark. We've had so much excess money just in the system that it really let us kind of sail past where we would have normally had problems. A lot of the kind of lag times that you would see in past cycles, we've kind of gone past those, which has really confused a lot of people. And it did me last year, to be fair. And that was when I realized, okay, I got to like kind of redo my model here for all this, you know, hey, $5 trillion of stimulus, that buys you some time, as it turns out. So, but now the clouds are starting to get dark. We're maybe not really in the storm yet, but we're seeing some signs. Like you mentioned, the jobless claims. And now Massachusetts is saying some of their claims were fraud. So maybe that number isn't quite as high as it looked. But even if you stripped out all of Massachusetts' jobless claims, you would still have been a significant beat of what was expected. So the turn is starting to happen in the labor market, which has been very well laid out by all the leading indicators for labor. Like, they've all shown you this is going to happen for really, I don't know, like 9 months. And that's why we depend on leading indicators and don't just look out the window at what's going on. So that's going to keep getting worse. Now, jobless claims may go back down, you know, 240 or something next couple weeks, but the turn is, it's here. As far as the economy, kind of more, bigger picture, we're seeing top line earnings growth, like, really starting to slow down, which makes perfect sense. We're seeing Bank of America saying, like, hey, when we look at the card spending data within Bank of America, retail sales is starting to go negative. It's getting worse for the people with the most money, actually, the people that earn over $125,000, just as pretty much all of corporate America just pivoted to sell everything to the wealthy and to go upscaling luxury and to, you know, take out their lowest brands and everything. They kind of did that at the exact wrong time. So I think it just gets worse from here, more or less. May was kind of whenever I thought things would start to deteriorate, but would really get bad in that kind of June, July. So the data that comes out more in like July, I think that's when things get really ugly. And that's when the non-farm payrolls, like actual jobs report, can actually go negative. And that's when I think the market will freak out.
When we're talking about one of the things that I think is so important for people to remember right now, and I was actually shocked by this too. Do you know where the 10-year yield was on January 1st of last year?
No.
If I'm not mistaken, I the only reason why I say this with any level of certainty is because I checked it recently. I believe it was about 1.78. Okay? So that means that we have been on – now, the Fed had started – well, no. When was the first hike? Was it first quarter of 22?
It was.
Okay. Yeah, so 1.78. We're not even 16 months into this. Okay? And we've been at these interest rate levels – 5% plus for like 2.5 months, right? How long does it take? And I've listened to some really good things. Cam Carson, Jam Croissant.
Yep.
You know, I heard him talking, very sharp guy. Heard him talking the other day about this, and I couldn't agree with him more. But he goes, like, look, this always happens. Rates go up and nothing happens for like the first 4 or 5 months. And everybody's like, oh, it's okay. Okay. Walk us through why, and we've been talking about this on the show for a while now, but the lag effect. When rates go up, everybody's like, oh, it's going to hit the fan. You're like, no, hold on. Got to give it time. Well, what is that? Why is there – explain to the listeners why there is a lag effect and how you laid this out. And I remember at the time you and I having a slight disagreement. I thought we would start seeing recessionary pressures and recessionary type indicators floating up in the fourth quarter of last year. Now, there were a couple little things you could have pointed to, but we really haven't started, in my opinion, from looking at it, we really haven't started seeing some of this stuff really until the last, 4 or 5 weeks. So your timing on it was, at least so far, has been dead on the money. What is that lag effect about? Why does it take a while for this stuff to... And why do we fall for it every single time? Why 5 months in, there's no impact. And so explain, walk us through that, would you?
There's so much. So first of all, I think everyone realizes that as an economy, as a society, however you want to look at it, we're incredibly leveraged. So we use debt for just about everything these days. If you look at just total debt to GDP, those leverage ratios, they're really high. So because of that, you think about all that debt, it's not all financed at a one-day resetting rate. A lot of it's financed. Maybe you have a loan that's going to cover you for 6 months or a year, or 2 years or 3 years maybe. And until that thing resets on you, the fact that inflation's high and rates are high, it just doesn't bother you. In fact, it's good for you. If you're a small business and you took out a loan at 3% and now inflation's 7% and your sales are exploding higher, you're doing great. But then next thing you know, the bank's like, hey, we got to roll over your 3% loan, and now it's 6. And that changes things. And now that's fine as long as your sales are still strong. But then next thing you know, your sales aren't strong, and you're paying a significant new rate on your debt, and then you just kind of get squeezed. And that happens with the whole economy. It happens to the government. It happens to small businesses. It happens to individuals. I mean, we're about to hit $1 trillion in credit card debt in America right now, and that's with an over 20% interest rate. So the interest rate is at an all-time high on credit cards. They're tightening up the lending standards on them, and we're going to hit a new high on credit card debt. That's the kind of stuff that you, whenever you multiply that across the entire economy for individuals, for businesses, for governments, and then the income starts to go down, in part because everyone's paying so much in interest. It's just how you get these recessions. And I think a lot of people just look out the window and they see, well, stocks are fine, and businesses seem like they're doing fine. And it's hard to see the fact that we went from 0% interest rates to 5 because it hasn't flowed through. And that's not the only way it flows through purely in those interest rates on credit. Usually what you have is an inventory cycle associated where people buy too much stuff and then they have to dump it at a cheaper price later and take losses. So inventory cycles, this refinancing cycle, it all compounds, and it can take even a couple of years, to like really flow through. So if you kind of go back, the first rate hike was in March and that was a small one. The first big one was in May. So we literally just got to 1 year from the first big hikes. We have not even come close to feeling the impact of those multiple 75 basis point hikes. I just looked at the data this morning and, the interest rate for short-term loans for small businesses right now is 8.5%.
Jeez. Coming from where? Where was that 2 years
probably
ago?
Probably about 3. So,
and this is where, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the thing that people don't understand. And one of the reasons they don't understand is we've never seen a hiking cycle this aggressive, right? But in a recession, you own a business, you own a store. Maybe your sales drop 5, 10, 15%. It's not an existential, you know, infliction of pain on the business. But if your sales pull back 5 to 10%, and the debt you've got in the business, the rate on that debt goes up 2.5x. Together, you can imagine the strains that puts on a business.
Yes.
And what will a business do in that environment? Well, it's got to cut. It's got to cut cost. What's the biggest cost center? Labor, right? This is kind of how recessions happen, right? This is how they unfold. And that's why, and you can speak to this, that's why you and I have agreed on this. It's just remarkable to me that the recession, non-recession debate is still going on. Where when you look at just, you know, forget the other things in the economy, right? Forget the idiocy that's stacked up. Forget about the negative cash flowing company. You know what I mean? Forget about all of those other, you know, all that other stuff that we know is out there, just the rate hiking cycle alone, right? It's kind of gotten to a point, and maybe I'm being hyperbolic when I say this, and so feel free to correct me, but when you just look at the rate movements alone, this whole recession, non-recession debate to me seems ridiculous. Like, it's like a child's story. You know, like, well, we're going to increase the cost of the debt by 2.5x, and there will not be a recession in a debt-driven economy. Walk me through that math, right? So, so do you agree with that? Just on the recessionary, you know, just on the because I feel like if you threw these rate hikes at our economy at any point in the cycle, let alone when we're withdrawing the biggest stimulus of all time at the same time, right? You add up all these things. And I don't want to box you into a corner when I say this, but you never want to say anything in this business is impossible, because nothing is impossible. That being said, is there any example we can point to in the last 100 years where you saw a setup like this that did not result in bad economic outcomes?
No, absolutely not. The interesting thing to me is that you can take multiple data points and come to the same conclusion. So some of the most powerful ones are going to be the tightening of credit. If you just put that on a chart and you go back and you look, or just inflation or food prices, I could probably come up with at least a dozen separate indicators and then show every time they spiked as much as they did in the last 2 years, you had a recession. The data is like really powerful when it comes to that. The only thing that has offset it to me is just we still had a good bit of money floating around last year. We kind of drew excess savings down from well over $1 trillion to now about $500 billion at about a clip of $100 billion a month. We've talked about it before on the show. We talked about it yesterday at lunch. 6% of spending last year was just excess savings still laying around from the stimulus. So that really masked a lot of kind of under the surface pain.
And Chase, to put that in perspective, I don't mean to interrupt you, but if let's just say for whatever reason in our economy, consumer spending dropped by 9%, just to put that, or 6%, to put that number in perspective, wouldn't a 6% pullback in consumer spending alone create a recession?
Yes.
Yeah. So that alone. So when that excess spending that was funded by excess savings last year, which that money isn't there anymore. Well, I mean, there's some of it left, but
right
that
threw it down a lot.
Yeah. You start adding it all up. And this is kind of the conversation we were having at lunch the other day where, look, I know nothing's impossible and I'm keeping my head on a swivel trying to figure out if and where we're wrong.
Always.
It's just hard to do the math and come away with a rosy outcome. I mean, right?
Absolutely. And the funny thing is, you know, the example I gave about the small business and just having their rates go up, to me, it's the most powerful example and it's the easiest one to kind of mentally walk through. But the reality is that is a very benign example because your average small business doesn't have that much leverage. But when we talk about banks or we talk about, you know, office real estate, there are business models that require a lot of leverage to even work. Like you can't make money without the leverage. So some businesses are in a position where they're basically just like zombies. They're dead, but they're still alive. So you look at something like office real estate where they leverage up on those cap rates. Well, now if they go back, you know, to the bank with where cap rates are going to be now, like it's just an impossible business model. So that's where we'll see all these defaults. And it's not like that is the only business out there that uses a lot of leverage and then leveraged up to, you know, 1-2% interest rates. And I mean, I know a lot of people think the banking thing is just bank runs and scared depositors, but the reality is every bank has interest rate risk. It's not like any bank just sat out 2020 and 2021 and didn't put any money to work. They can't do that. So they all have a bunch of interest rate risk. And even banks aren't the only ones. You know, a lot of private equity, a lot of what we call shadow banks, which are just people that lend money but don't have a banking charter. And that is an enormous sector and globally as well. And I guarantee a lot of them leverage it up to 1-2%. So the point being, there are business models that literally don't work with what we just did in the last year. And we're going to find that out, you know, as the tide goes out in the coming months.
Yeah. The only place to hide are the safe spots like Carvana.
Exactly.
And Tesla. Yeah. That'll get you squared away. okay. So moving to the rest of it, what is our timetable now that you're looking for? You know, where are we at, do you think, until the realization of recession, assuming that we're correct, that the realization of recession hits this market? And then most importantly, and you can, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but just spectating the Fed for the better part of the last two decades and then reading, you know, just all the research that both you and I have done, all that kind of stuff and reading and all that. Yeah, my suspicion would be they're probably going to wait too long to cut. Right?
Oh, yeah.
So where do you think we are in that cycle in terms of what kind of timetable are we looking at? Because I don't know if you agree with this, but it does feel to me like 2 months ago, that higher for longer thing, I didn't agree with it, but I did. That was very much the feeling in markets really until the bank issue started popping up, because you're like, okay, we're going to have to wait for this to feed all the way through because this market is that dumb and blind where it's going to have to get smacked in the face with bad earnings to realize where we're at. That worm has already started to turn. And my feeling is that the start of this was frustratingly slow. I'd expect it at some point to vacillate to the other side of things and pick up pace faster than most would anticipate. It kind of feels like that's starting now. What is our timetable? Do you agree with that assessment? You know, and obviously, when we start talking about timetables, guys, don't take this to the bank at all because this is just us, you know, spitballing here. But where do you think we're at on the timeline of this whole thing?
Yeah, we were talking about Warren Pies earlier, and what I'll say is, he thinks this happens kind of late in the year, so kind of a November, December thing. And partially because I think he views excess savings as still being robust enough to kind of drag us along into that. And also because of his view on construction employment, which I think are both perfectly valid views. But I think the financial stress that we've kind of created with the banking system and the tightening of credit will basically just overpower that. So we'll still have it sooner. But he may be right. So maybe this thing's another 2-3 quarters away. But my view is we will go into recession this summer, but we won't know that, you know, until probably next year. That we never find out we're in a recession until it's too late. Typically, what will happen is many months later, the government will come out and say, you know what, we messed up on those jobs reports by, you know, the tune of like 1 million jobs. We're just going to revise those out and back in these certain months. Our bad. And then the NBER will come out and say, oh, by the way, you guys were in a recession 13 months ago. So we just marked that. Go mark that on your Bloomberg chart now. That was a recession.
Well, you and I were having this conversation the other day where everybody's talking about the strong jobs markets, and we were looking at the absolute data. The market was still flying off of that last jobs report, and at the same time they announced revisions, the new jobs report everybody was excited about was like 250. The jobs revisions at the same time were like 180. So the revisions had basically completely wiped out the job gains that the market was celebrating about, and the market didn't even blink.
No one cares about revisions, but they care. So it's one of those things where, and it interestingly enough, it kind of marks turning points whenever they start making some revisions. If you go back and look at the history, like it's very often right around when you enter a recession is when they will start making some little revisions. But later they'll come back and make even probably some bigger ones, especially since their birth-death model is kind of out of control right now, and their seasonal adjustments are all messed up because of COVID. Like, and they're openly admitting, like, hey, our data is a little weird right now. Like, they're confused. So I think it's going to be the summer. The most reliable thing to know is when jobs go negative, but it's going to be kind of obvious just from, you know, looking at things like retail sales and everything. But if all you do is look out the window and look at what we call coincident data, kind of the real time, like as it's happening data, you'll miss every recession. Like, you're already in one by the time that data tells you. So that's why I don't understand. I understand people that are just pundits to you know, say, hey, everything's fine when they look out the window. But if you put money to work professionally, you don't have the luxury of waiting until it's obvious, because the markets are going to end up doing a lot of work for you before it becomes obvious. So if you wait until CNBC tells you and you're in a recession, the market's probably already down 40%, or, you know, our bonds have already gone up a lot. So that's kind of the whole point of skating where the puck's going.
Again, one data point, but I thought that quarterly announcement from Disney was fairly telling. Just because, like you and I have discussed, you know, the biggest economic impulse in the last year and a half has been travel, leisure, and hospitality and things like that.
So almost all the jobs the last 6 months too.
Right. Disney's a pretty good proxy for that sector.
Yeah.
Right? And the other reason why I think it's a good proxy is, you know, think about all of the I don't know, and I could be speaking out of turn here, but I don't know. It may be one of the best proxies for figuring out where the excess savings rate is. You know what I mean? If you want to know how long that excess let's look at how long parents are taking their kids down to Disneyland, right, to make up for the lost COVID year and, you know, stuff like that. And then you look at the movies. You just look at what they're tied into, streaming. If Disney's getting smacked like they are right now, you know, again, we'd have to go back and look at the data. My assumption would be that it probably has not happened many times outside of a recession or leading. You know what I mean? Like, you kind of look at them and it's just like, well, that's a pretty good proxy for consumer spending, right?
It definitely is, yeah. And speaking of consumer spending, one of the things I track really closely is the ratio of consumer discretionary stocks versus consumer staples, and that is one of many things that has just been screaming weakness and screaming recession to me. People are always going to buy the staples. So you're always going to need toilet paper, but you're not always going to need to see a Mickey Mouse. And those kinds of ratios are telling you, like, hey, like, consumer is not doing great.
Yeah. Yeah. Contrary to what what you're being fed on the, you know, Bubble Vision, CNBC and all that other kind of stuff. I think the important, you brought up the coincident data or putting your head out the window and looking at that kind of stuff. I don't know why this is the case, but it always is, which is, it's almost like everybody in financial media has taken an oath to, you know, refuse that things are bad or refuse the idea that there is a recession until it literally is broken down the front door. So if you're expecting to hear it from there, you're not going to. Right. One of the other things I want to talk to you about is you had an interesting debate recently with a buddy of yours mm-hmm. on Kevin Muir's show, mm-hmm. and he's bullish as all heck, mm-hmm. right? Can you walk us through that? Because I know where you and I are at, and I know that he's a smart guy too, and I'm not hammering on him at all. You know, that's what makes a market. There have been many times. I mean, I always have an opinion. I'm never short on opinions. But I look at this current setup, and there have been a lot of times where I've disagreed with market directions, but I understood the other side of it, right? I understood the argument. Even when I read it now, and I'm trying to get my head around, one of the things I've struggled with in the last year and a half, especially in the last 4 or 5 months, is that if I close my eyes and I listen to the world and I look around at the things going on, my internal clock is telling me, hey, it might not be a bad time to start thinking about things to buy, right? You got a war, you got the interest rate hikes, inflation, you got all these bad. The only problem is then you go look at asset prices and they're still all, you know, right peg close to all-time highs, right? Which is kind of an anomaly. What I have a very hard time with is trying to look at what we're looking at today and forming a bullish narrative around it. And I know for those of you out there, I understand that valuations are not a good timing mechanism, but that is the part of it, both in housing, unemployment rates. I mean, any different way that you could look at these things in terms of I know unemployment rates aren't the same as valuations, right? But it's unemployment rates kind of like the unemployment rates kind of like the PE ratio of the labor market, you know. You look at all these things and I'm just sitting there going, guys, I can't see anything bullish. Every single thing I look at looks like peak cycle, including the valuations, meaning how many times do markets bottom at 23 times earnings and just shoot up from there?
All right, guys, due to time constraints, we got to cut this interview off right there. But as always, pretty much every podcast engine out there has it. So you can just Google Know Your Risk Radio podcast. You can hear the rest of the interview if you want to know what's coming up. Have a phenomenal weekend, and we'll see you next week. You're listening to the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham now at knowyourriskradio.com. Zach will be back with more Know Your Risk Radio next Saturday at noon on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH.
The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.